Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Jeff, and welcome back to another episode of Lean In with Jeff. I hope you guys are having a wonderful week and a wonderful afternoon. It is official. We have exactly 2 more weeks of classes, and we are finished for this semester. Time flies really fast, guys. I can't believe it. This is going to be my final 2 weeks of class. It's really surreal, but I'm also very excited for what's to come next. All right, without further ado, let's get into today's episode. I'm going to be reviewing a movie with my lovely friend Randy. It's going to be a wonderful episode, so please stay tuned. But before we get started, let's get through some ads, some PSAs, and some show promos, and we'll get right into the episode. So I'll see you guys in a couple minutes.
You're listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
Are you interested in radio? Do you want to start your own show but you don't know where to get started? Make your radio dreams come true by joining a collective. From the news collective, the arts collective, the music collective, the sports collective, the accessibility collective, the indigenous collective, and the intersectionality collective, there's something for everyone. And we provide free technical training to get started. Explore these worlds virtually and in person, and be prepared to make fun friends. For more information, visit citr.ca/get involved.
All right, get ready. Here we go again.
This music, reggae music, is tell you and tell the whole world, you know. Telepathically and physically and mentally and spiritually, we are telling them to this music, yeah.
So you heard it here at Rocker Show 101.9 FM CITR, featuring yours truly, George Beard, keeping the reggae music alive on the west coast of Canada. It's all about roots rock, lovers rock, dancehall, reggae music. On CITR Rocker Show, Sunday noon to 3 p.m. each and every Sunday. Love of Jack. For over 25 years of doing it nice, warm, and easy. Until next time, such time, keep the faith and spread it gently. Jah bless and Jah guidance. Jah out. Bless out.
Don't mind on the rhythm and no wine in a ace. Glad I'm up here in a rubber, don't bless. Dance out.
Are you interested in playing, watching, or discussing all things cricket? Look no further than UBC's Cricket Club. Reach out to @AMSUBCCricketClub on Instagram to get connected today. Are you someone in recovery? Someone struggling with addiction or disordered eating? Or are you simply curious to explore your relationship to alcohol, drugs, and other types of addictive behaviors? The UBC Student Recovery Community is a safe space to connect with others. The SRC provides many types of support, such as drop-in hours, recovery meetings, one-on-one support, and even has a dedicated recovery lounge. The SRC supports all pathways of recovery, from harm reduction to abstinence and everything in between. You can learn more at recovery_UBC on Instagram. And you can also contact the community at src.recovery@ubc.ca. Remember, you're not alone.
All right, and we are back. Let's get straight into the episode. I'm excited to talk about this. Randy, if you can hear me, can you please introduce yourself? Hello?
Hello?
Hi. Hi, Randy. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Awesome. Would you like to just do a quick introduction?
Absolutely. My name is Randy. I am currently, I used to be a CITR quite a while ago, and now I live in Edmonton, and I'm doing my master's, and then hopefully I will get a job that makes it so I can afford my rent and maybe a few things on top of that. And I'm very excited to be here to talk about this movie.
Absolutely. Me too. I forgot to ask this, but you are also, are you a current programmer still with the Dog Year Book Club, or has that been postponed?
You know, I was doing like super well. I kept the show up during my year after my undergrad, and then I kept it up when I first moved to Edmonton. And then that first month of grad school, it took a hiatus, an unplanned break. So Dog-Eared Radio Book Club definitely still exists. However, new content has not been out since October. But I'm hoping and I'm planning for, as soon as I finish out this semester, getting back into it and starting to produce content again. Because I really enjoy it, and I miss reading books I like.
Have you been up to date with your readings, though?
I'm trying, but I have to say I'm reading a lot in school, in grad school. A lot of my classes assign us whole books. So I'm reading books I probably wouldn't have picked up on my own, which I really, really like. However, my personal TBR is forever growing, and I would definitely like to make a dent in it.
Alrighty. Let's get straight into it. I want to ask, where did you stumble upon this movie, and why was it so intriguing for you to recommend this?
Absolutely. Okay, so I think the first time I ever saw anything about this movie was back, I'm guessing like fall or like maybe into the winter time, and it was a TikTok edit. And I don't really remember the specifics of it, and I don't have it saved to look it up, but it was essentially like, you know, the edit movie edits where they clip like maybe one or two parts together. And it was being like, oh, like this movie is for the dark, like monster romance readers. And I was like, oh my gosh, I read monster romance, like paranormal romance. So I was like, this movie looks so interesting. And then I think I kind of forgot about it because it wasn't on any streaming services and I'm really cheap. And then I never heard anything about a theatrical release. So I think it passed my mind, but then I started getting more videos, like a month or so ago, of more like movie reviewers talking about it. And this one reviewer was like, this is one of the most underrated movies to come out last year. Everyone should be watching it. It's really, really good. And so I was like, oh, I'm going to check. Maybe it's somewhere. And then I looked it up and it was on Prime. So I was like, well, perfect. Now I'll watch it. And I went in literally not knowing anything more than the TikTok edit I had seen and watching, I think I may have watched the trailer. And so I really, really got to enjoy every moment of it. And so then I was like, this is a really interesting movie. So you happened to text me and I was like, you should look at this movie. Because, I was just kind of blown away by it when I watched it.
First of all, I'm so glad you recommended this because I enjoyed it a lot. I think I've watched it maybe 3 times now. It's a very, very interesting movie. The thing is, though, I assume that you know this as well. I don't really deal with a lot of monster romances or musicals at all. What this movie reminded me of was Beauty and the Beast, which ironically I did not watch either, but it still reminded me of it. But I really, really enjoyed the movie. In particular, the romance was great, but the comedy was just so my type of comedy. I think the monster was it was just amazing. It's not the typical monster that you think of when you think of what a monster is. Like this whole ideology of, you know, when you're young, you know, the monster's under your bed. It deals with those concepts, but in such a different and refreshing way that the movie was so amazing. Were you always interested in these monster romance movies? If you were, what kind of aspects does these types of movies have that you really enjoy?
I don't know if you could say I have a lot of interest in the like movies, because there's just not that many out there. But I have been reading like monster romance books since high school and probably junior high, if we're being real honest here. And I think they're always they're always really interesting because they have a really direct conversation about like desirability and like who is to be desired, right? Like this concept of the monster is like something that is used in like horror and we're very scared of it and you're supposed to be fearful. And so monster romance is like, it's making that body desirable, which is very, very interesting. And it creates some very good dynamics. Yeah, I think a lot of them can have like the similar reason of like why a lot of readers like dark romance of like dealing with different complexities in relationships. So I think monster romance can give that as well. And some of them are just downright extremely entertaining and hilarious. I won't get too into it, some of the details, but I think they just offer, like you said, I think this book is actually a really good example of like a good monster romance novel in the way that the movie does a great job of bringing together all the things you're talking about. It brings together the romance, it brings together the comedy, it brings together the suspense. Like it really kind of offers you everything on a plate. Which, yeah, is just really enjoyable. I think the other thing is, like, monster romance can offer really good, like, tensions or, like something different than, like, the conventional third act breakup or, like, outside interference. Because, obviously, the romance between, like, two monsters or a monster and a human, it comes with, like, a lot of complexity that the characters have to navigate. And so that gives you your tension that you're looking for in a romance story.
Absolutely. I'm just going to begin with my first question when I finish the movie is this is fantasy. However, the movie does seem to progress as if the monster is a real life entity.
Right.
But the ending really kind of twisted and made me think, or at least do you think that this movie is possibly maybe a dream or some sort of, I don't want to say hallucination because that seems like I'm characterizing the character as being, I mean, she is kind of emotionally unstable, but not in like, you know, she went through a break, you know, she broke up with her boyfriend. But it really just made me question, was everything real? Was the monster real? And kind of made me question what was really going on. So do you think that this was kind of depicted as something real? Was the monster real? Was everything, I guess, real?
Oh my gosh, what a question to start me off with there, Jeff. I think, okay, my like ultimate answer is I think that the director and the writer, I don't know if they're the same person, but I think the beauty of this film is like you can choose to believe whatever you want. Like you could very much read the movie as like the monster is a representation of her like inner monster, like her like power as a person, which she severely lacks at the beginning. She's like a giant pushover. And so as the monster enters her life at this like very low moment and she starts to become like more confident, that's when they're like falling in love. And she, you know, starts to like advocate for herself. And then when she regresses, when she has sex with her ex, that's when the monster disappears. Like she's essentially like faulted and like gone back to that like cowardly self. And then I'm going to spoil the whole thing. I should have said that
before I started
talking. But then at the end of the film, when she kills her ex and she essentially just lets it all out, that's when the monster comes back. So I think you can very much read the film as like the monster is a metaphor for her. I don't like you could say.
Sorry,
like,
Randy.
Darkness.
We just got a call from another fellow person. I'm just going to see who this is.
Absolutely.
All right. Let's see. Hello. Would you like to speak up?
Oh, hi.
Hello.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. How are you?
Hi. Good. Sorry, I didn't hear you say anything on the phone. Or I'm having troubles with my phone. It's Darren calling from Outlook TV, and I was wondering if there was somebody who's around that'd be interested in doing a little news story on your station, Barb, or one of the other people that's doing it.
I'm not quite sure. We're actually on a live show right now.
You are?
Yes. So you are live on air.
fantastic.
Yes. Well, I guess you could talk to Jasper, who's the station manager here. He's currently at the station, so I guess you can maybe go into contact with him.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
All right.
Well, great. Well, I'm sorry to interrupt your busy day. Keep going.
No problem. All right. Thank you.
Cheers, man.
All right. See ya. All right. That was another call. So I haven't had a lot of calls throughout the years of my show. So it's very excited to get these calls in just in case anything is up with any, you know, any issues. But Randy, you're back.
All right.
Sorry for the interruption. But it seems like there has been some sort of communication that needed. But sorry to interrupt. So we left off about whether this movie is real or a fantasy.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think kind of the end of my thought was that, yeah, I think you can read the monster as being a metaphor for her. Like I said, I don't like the phrasing of inner darkness, but I like to think of it more as like her power. That also sounds so cheesy as I'm saying it, but either way, but I think you can also just like enjoy the movie and like decide to, and I actually saw a TikToker, I shouldn't take full credit for this thought, but I saw a TikToker say this, I don't remember their account, but they also were like reflecting and saying like, yeah, you can believe he's real. Like, honestly, like believe that they, you know, he whisked her away off stage and they run away and live happily ever after. Because the movie truly ends at a part where, like, I mean, I think a person would be like, oh, well, obviously she gets arrested. But, like, that's such a boring way to imagine the ending. Like, the point of the director leaving you with, like, a full opening to be like, hey, use your imagination. I think that's kind of the beauty of it. So that was my way of, like, working around your answer because it feels so, I don't know, crushing to be like, oh, none of it was real, because I think that's like the beauty of fantasy, like it leaves you questioning and wondering like what did I just watch. But yeah, I don't know if that fits in with your thoughts.
Yeah, I think that's a beautiful way to put it. I do think that the movie, one of the strengths is the fact that it gives the audience a chance to choose whether or not we want to believe that it's real or not. For mm-hmm. me at least, well, kind of to begin with, I thought that the monster was kind of, and he probably is the kind of the co-protagonist. But after seeing, you know, the scenes where he disappears or where he, you know, comes to the party and he dances with Laura, but it doesn't seem like the monster is really interacting or nobody seems to notice the monster at all.
Yeah.
I mean, although it's a Halloween party, it doesn't seem like there's any sort of external contact with the monster and other people other than Laura. It made me realize, you know what? I think the movie is really trying to center around, like you said, how Laura is really just a pushover. She's not, she doesn't seem to be very independent with herself. She's mm-hmm. completely broken of the fact that her boyfriend Jacob not only broke up with her because he couldn't handle her illness, but the fact that he didn't even invite her to star in the play that they co-wrote together. So that was mm-hmm. absolutely devastating. So I think the monster himself may be a fantasy, but I think the entire character development that Laura had to go through and kind of finding mm-hmm. herself, finding her power, which I don't think is weird at all. I literally think that's a great word. She mm-hmm. kind of figures herself out, tries to be more open with her emotions and more explicit with what she says. And so that whole development, I think, is really real and something that we should really put a lot of focus into. There are several scenes that I find very, very funny, and I just want to kind of talk them through with you. The first scene, the entrance of the monster, completely caught off guard, and the one word he says is hey. What did you think about this entrance? Was this something that you really found comedic?
Absolutely. I think I like how they like lead you into like the horror feeling. Like you get the flickering lights, you get the shaking, you get the why wouldn't I go towards the scary noise? Like, the kind of all those, like, elements. And then the result we get is, hey, and then, like, screaming bloody murder, which I think is just so great. And I think when he's explaining that scene back to her, because she, like, faints, and then when she comes to you again, he's like, you were screaming, and then you were on the floor, and I could have left you on the floor, but, like, I'm not a monster. I mean, I am a monster, but I'm not a monster. Like, that, like, the sort of just, like, not nonchalance, but that was very, very comedic. And a great way to introduce the character.
Oh, yeah. It was amazing. It almost didn't even feel like he was a monster. It just seemed like a normal person who was habitating within the house, and it seems like Laura just didn't know about it. And so I think it was the most funniest part. What do you think is the purpose, or what kind of thing does it serve to make a monster just so mundane in a movie like this?
That's a really good question. I think part of it is, like, this is the other funny part about, like, monster romance, is the majority of monster romance, especially heterosexual romance, still, like, although it does disrupt the concepts of desirability, it still definitely falls into, like, a somewhat version of, like, conventional attractiveness. So I think to some extent they can't make the monster repulsive, right? So I think that's, like, what plays into it, is, like, he's supposed to feel like just a guy, to some extent, while also recognizing, you know, his role. And they do that by sort of, like, pointing out the comedic things, like when he's, like, eating the bottled scotch, like he's just eating the glass, he's not even drinking it. Like, I think they do things like that to point out his monstrosity, while still kind of maintaining a desirability for Laura. Yeah, I don't know if that makes sense.
No, absolutely. First of all, I did recognize the fact that the monster only seemed to have that monstrous quality within the face and maybe in the hands, but the overall physical form seemed quite conventional in terms of what a human looks like. And so I think in that way, it maybe almost tries to humanize the monster in a way to kind of give it a more of an easier approach to, I guess, both the audience and maybe to Laura. So the comedy works very well to kind of make this entire scene of just, like, chaos. Because keep in mind that entrance of, you know, Laura screaming in the hospital when Jacob leaves was quite terrifying for me, at least. It really gave a very horror film-like atmosphere. And to kind of dial that down, I think the comedy did a very, very good job in doing so. Another thing that I want to mention is Monster doesn't seem to try and win over almost Laura, or portray qualities that will draw Laura in. He's very real, and I really love to see that. He's very real with who he is, you know, whether it's like eating the glass or when they're trying to write together, throwing the plates in the kitchen. It just seemed very, very real, and I think I really enjoyed that the love wasn't forced, but you can kind of see Laura slowly opening up. But there seemed to be a very fine line between her opening up and really seeing who Monster is as a person, and also seeing her younger self being a little bit more free and more adventurous. What did you think about those two lines? Did you recognize that at all, with, you know, the romance and then kind of the yearning for kind of a more childlike persona?
Yeah, absolutely. I think I'm just going to go back to what you first kind of said. Like, I think his realness, again, if we're going with the metaphorical reading, which I think plays into it, absolutely. Like, I think that's part of what Laura has to go through when you're talking about her character development. Like, she has to come to it naturally. She can't be forced or lured into it. Like, it's her working on herself and working through these things. To, like, own up to that power. So I think that's why it comes, like, he comes across as so, like authentic and just like not really trying. And I think, yeah, it had a good parallel for the romance, but then also for that like metaphorical aspect. And I think the point of the child is like very true. Like part of, I think, Laura being so like a pushover, is also her, I think, being, I don't know if repressed would be the right word, but like a relatively like, not expressive adult. I don't know how to put it like very nicely, but I think, you know, she was in a very long-term relationship where I think Jacob was like the, let's just say he knew how to take up all the space in a room. And so I think she had kind of molded herself into that. And I think also like the movie doesn't super touch on it, but like she did have cancer. Like she was very ill for quite a long period of time, was in hospitals and like you like lacking any sort of like control, right? Being sort of taken care of by all these people that you necessarily don't know super well, not really having like a strong network to take care of her. So I think in a lot of ways, like the yearning for simplicity is both, I think, her, you know, wanting to let her anger out, which we see in several parts of the movie that she does, but also just being like, I think part of it is like wanting care and like to feel heard and like to have like take up space, I guess, is kind of those things, which I think we associate with children, right? Children are pretty free, especially at young ages before they're sort of molded into certain shapes. And so I think there is a sort of line that you can draw connecting those kind of two points.
Absolutely. I also really loved the details within small scenes. I don't know if you remember the scene with the nurse whenever she, you know, Laura would have to go back and get her blood tested. Mm-hmm. The nurse is quite rude. She doesn't seem like she enjoys her job. She's not very nice to Laura. But in the first encounter, I believe that the nurse says something along the lines of, you know, this isn't your first time. Why are you like this? And then towards the end, Laura replies by saying, I have a difficult nurse. And you can kind of slowly see that transition with her. You know what? There's a very interesting word you use is anger. Do you think, because, you know, when she does say, you know, I have a very difficult nurse, she is in a way expressing herself and really just saying something that just is real with her and what she feels kind of for the first time without caring about anything else. Do you think that this expression is more correlated to her expressing anger, or is it more of like that aspect of freeness? Because this kind of trickles down to the ending where it's very violent in terms of how it ends. It's a musical, yeah, but it's very, very graphic and violent. And it really made me question, I kind of understand the fact that she was very, I guess, preserved in a way emotionally, and she couldn't really let herself out. She just constantly had an eye on herself and really kept her guard up. And then all of a sudden, you know, she decides to be really free with her emotions, but takes a very, very brutal approach. Was there a certain thing that you interpreted within these scenes? What is that your thought? What's your thought on this?
Yeah, I think so. Two key things that I can touch on is she's absolutely very angry. She's like, I think she's one of the angriest person ever. And there's so many scenes where she's like unlocking that anger. The one that I really, really love is when they go to the Halloween party, she sees Jacob with somebody and she's leaving and they're walking and she's like, oh, you know, whatever. And then Monster's like, no, it's not okay. And just keeps repeating this phrase of like, it's not okay. And then Laura sort of like being like, yeah, it's not okay. And then she like progressively starts screaming, it's not okay. And I think it is like, she has been repressed and repressing those feelings that it is like, I think it actually makes sense for the culmination of the film to be so violent because she's repressed it for so long. And although she's like let it out throughout the film, I think it's never you know, fully been able to be realized. And so I think that's my first thing, is she is definitely very angry. But the other thing I want to say is it's very difficult to like separate anger from other emotions. And I think that's something that this film understands, is it's not just painting her as angry. It's not just painting her as sad. She's literally every range of emotions you could ever possibly think of. She's got more emotions than Inside Out. Like it's, and I really appreciate that, because I think it complicates the way you feel about things, because yeah, like our emotions are not simple and they're not easy to understand. They're not even easy to express sometimes. And yeah, it's kind of like, I don't know, like I've cried when I get really angry, and I've had people be like, why are you crying? And I'm like, I'm really angry. And they're like, that doesn't make any sense. And I'm like, but it does though.
Yeah.
Like it does actually make a lot of sense. So yeah, those are the two things that like, I absolutely think that she is angry. And I think the building of her expressing that anger makes a lot of sense. And then I also think this movie does a good job of complicating emotions and understanding how, yeah, like she just doesn't fit into one or the other.
I really, really enjoyed that scene when they come out of the party after doing whatever Monster did to Jacob. And then that whole repetition of, you know, the monster telling and reminding Laura that it's not okay. First of all, reminded me of the movie Good Will Hunting. Have you seen?
I have, but it's been a number of years.
There's a scene where Robin Williams is like, it's not your fault, and he just continues to repeat it. And I just found that this, I just think that this scene in particular is just so, so great, because it kind of goes to show that this, you just constantly need to be reminded, and you have to hear these, you know, these repeated words to really let it fully sink in. And sometimes when you say that everything is fine, you don't really give yourself the time to really comprehend and really swallow what is going on. And I think Monster does a very, very good job in aggressively, but also not at this, you know, not too aggressively, but kind of in the middle, to really just let Laura know that he's not really, that's another thing I love Monster, is that he's not really uplifting Laura as a person too much, for me at least. I just found that the monster was just trying to show Laura what is going on right now and what she isn't seeing. It's not like, Laura, you're great, you're an amazing person, you have a lot of talent. Yes, he does encourage that, but I also feel like Monster is just really trying to let Laura see what is going on and what is happening in front of her, because it seems like Laura's not really giving herself the time to recognize what kind of things she's dealing with. And I think that was just a really beautiful scene to kind of see. Moving on to the musical aspect, I think it served quite of a big romantic gesture, at least when they sang the song together in the piano. Is musical something that you enjoy watching? And do you think musical has some sort of aspect to it that really enhances possibly the romance or the way that the movie flows? What are some aspects of a musical that you enjoy?
Yeah, it's a good question. I would say in general, I'm kind of like you. I don't really enjoy musicals. I don't seek them out. But I also hate when shows have a random musical episode. Sometimes it's very well done. I will give credit to some shows, but usually it just takes me off guard and I'm like, I don't like this. Like, why are you doing this? But I think like in this movie, it made sense, because we're introduced to the fact that she's like an actor and a writer and a singer from the beginning. And so it's obviously an integral part to her role. And so when, you know, Jacob is like, oh, I wrote this play about you and I want you to be the lead. And then, you know, stuff happens. She gets cancer and he is like, oh, I'm leaving. And also, you're not going to be in my play. Is wild. And so I think it made a lot of sense for her to like stay involved in like the musical, and specifically for her singing that song with Monster, I think makes a lot of sense, because like it was her song. Like she even co-wrote it. And so I think, again, it kind of plays into that, like her owning her power and like getting more confidence. Yeah. So I think it played really well in this movie. It wasn't like over the top. And then again, like the scene when she's like singing, I felt like the end of the movie was like the perfect amount when they do like clips of the other songs. Then they have like the big kind of argument, and then she's covered in blood and she bursts out and she starts singing on stage. Like that was such a good scene. I was actually just rewatching it today to rewatch the ending. And yeah, I think I really enjoyed it in this film. Like I said, it's not something I'm usually drawn to, but I think, and also like the song itself, because this is, sorry if I'm getting too ahead away from the musical,
No.
I was like thinking about is like, so the movie is called Your Monster. So we're introduced to this monster character, but like Jacob is a monster. Like if we really want to think about it, like Jacob is a monster. He is so terrible. And like part of the process of like her realizing how terrible he is. And I think like her, like I think that song also is just so like, the lyrics and the message of the song play a role in the film is what I'm trying to get at. Like it wasn't just like tacked on to be fun. She wasn't singing something she could have been saying. It was extremely purposeful, the song that she was singing.
Wow, that's a very, very good point. Speaking of ironies, well, first I want to touch upon your point. Jacob is the monster. He is the true monster. And I think now that you mention it, this movie is really challenging the idea of what a monster is. And I think it does a great job in doing so by incorporating someone like Jacob, who externally is a human. He's, you know, he's a lover of Laura. And then now we see Monster who literally looks like someone who doesn't seem very nice. He isn't nice at first, actually. He's quite rude. He tries to kick Laura out, but he ends up, you know, letting her stay. And then we slowly get to unpack these characters and we get to see what defines a true monster. And we can see that it really isn't about the external parts, but it's about the internal, what the character is like. And I think that is actually one of the main points that this movie is trying to do, is really redefine what a monster is. And it doesn't always need to be something that looks like something, but more so of how someone acts. One irony that I found very interesting is the fact that Laura is an actor and theater is a core theme and art. All of these require a tremendous amount of expression, but ironically, Laura isn't able to do that, or she wasn't able to do that. And I think that kind of goes to show that even though there's a tool, and even though that she is within this industry of expressing emotions and being somebody that you might not be, but kind of you can still act that way and really express these different emotions, she isn't really able to do that authentically and, you know, towards herself and who she is. And I think that's a really, really interesting part that I found within the film. Speaking of these great aspects, obviously there are moments where I was kind of confused and questioning. And that was that you don't really see anybody with Laura in terms of like who her parents are, even though her best, quote unquote, best friend was able to, you know, get her out of the hospital and help her, I guess. You don't really see any connections that Laura has with her family, too much with her friends, or even like mentors, you know, whether it's like directors or fellow actors. She's kind of always alone. And so is Monster. Did you pick up anything interesting within these lines, or did you want to see more interactions with Laura and other people outside? How is that for you?
Okay, I would say no, because I think the whole point is to show how much she lost herself in her relationship with Jacob. She had, like, the point is she has no friends. We don't know who her dad is. Her mom travels and seems to me to kind of be perhaps like an oblivious parent, right? And so, like, I think that's the whole point, is to show, like, she is lonely, and she had, because I'm pretty sure they specified they've been together for 5 years when they were dating. And, like, that's a long time to be in a relationship. And, you know, people lose themselves in relationships. They can often become disconnected from friends. They start prioritizing their relationship more than those friendships. If their family is not close, then maybe it doesn't become a priority to go visit them. So I think that was like a key like point of her character, is that she constructed her life around Jacob and her relationship with Jacob. So when Jacob left her, all she has is this terrible person. I don't even remember her name. I just put her as terrible friend.
Okay. Let me see what her name is. Her name was Jackie.
Okay. Oh, no. Jackie was the blonde.
Maisie?
Yeah. Maisie. That seems like it could be right. Yeah. Yeah. And so, like, all she has is Maisie. And so, yeah, I think the movie wouldn't have made as much sense if we would have, like, for instance, like, if her mom, like, her mom couldn't have been there. Because then she wouldn't have been like alone in the house, and the whole metaphor, like none of that really would have played. So I think it was very intentional for the fact that she's either alone, she's this Maisie, she's at rehearsal, she's never with anybody else, she has no other friends. And Maisie points it out. She's like, well, you have no other friends. And I think something that is nice, though, is that like, it's quite easy to make Jackie the villain, who is like the person who does get cast as a star and who Laura originally thinks is the one that's hooking up with Jacob. And they could have like made her the villain, or like, I guess I should say another villain. There's quite a number of villains in this show. But I think they have this nice moment of connection where, you know, Jackie reaches out and says like, wow, I didn't know you're sick. I wanted to check in. Like this kind of stranger that Laura just doesn't know. And the people, like the two people that she does know, even the other actors who know Laura, who have more of a connection, who knew what went on in her life, like the one woman who tells Jackie what happened, none of those people ever sought her out to check on her. But then this just person does. And says, like, wow, that's super messed up. This happened to you. Like, I'm so sorry that I played a role in it. Like, so I think that's sort of like I think it's just like a nice moment that like also plays into like the growth of Laura, of like, you know, that happening and like being able to accept, you know, a stranger putting that sort of energy out. So yeah, those are kind of my thoughts. But yeah, I think it makes so much sense that there is like nobody else, because that's like the whole, she like lost herself in this relationship, and now she has to, you know, find her again and figure out who she is on her own.
Yeah. I mean, that's such an interesting point again, is that another irony is that Jackie seems to be the only friend of Laura, and it doesn't seem like they have any relationship with each other, but it just seems weird that Jackie is so invested and so caring to Laura, despite the fact that she knew Laura didn't like Jackie because of like this whole misunderstanding that was going on. And the point that you mentioned of the theater friends knew what was going on. They even knew that the play wasn't even about Jackie. It was about Laura. And it doesn't seem like there was any, I guess, cautionary measures that these theater, you know, actors, you know, made before Jackie was casted. It was after everything went down and Jackie's like, what is going on? That's when they decided to tell her. And so I think that was just a weird, weird choice. And like you said, there's so many villains in these, you know, in this film, that it's almost weird to say that Monster is really a monster, because everyone seems to be the monster except for Monster and Jackie, of course. But I want to go into the point where you mentioned how Laura, she doesn't have a lot of friends. She's trying to find herself. Would you say then that Laura didn't like Jacob But I guess the fact that she was included in something and that she had something to look forward to and maybe depend on, and maybe Laura did recognize the toxic traits of Jacob, but despite that, she was just too desperate to go into this. I don't want to say a situation of stability, but just somewhere where she can just be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. As someone who is in their mid-20s, I feel confident to say that that's definitely something that happens to people in relationships. Where you can invest like quite a lot of time. Like I said, 5 years is a long time. You move in together, like you're essentially building your lives together. And so it's not easy to leave that, right? Like it's not like you're unattached and you can just pick up and go. And so I think there is a level of like, yeah, whether we want to phrase it as like comfort or that she had, you know, someone that, you know, she shared common interests with, but whatever it was, like whatever her motivations to stay in that relationship, it definitely did impact her. Yeah. Like who she was and how she changed while she was in it. And so I think it's, yeah, pretty, pretty pivotal to her character. And yeah, it's hard. And I think that's another interesting that the movie tried, like, they didn't do like flashbacks where they show Jacob being terrible. They're not really giving us anything about their relationship, but we can obviously, you know, gain a lot from the moments that we do, or even just from observing Laura after that breakup and observing Jacob after the end of their relationship, and sort of, you know, I think we can kind of understand what he would have been like. And yeah, it's definitely, I think it complicates the sort of like simplistic view of like, oh, you're in this relationship, like long-term relationship with this person, and they do all these things. And as an outside observer, it's very easy for us to be like, yeah, you should leave. Like, that's really bad. It's not a good thing to be in. But for the person who's in it, it looks very different. And so I think that is part of what the movie is trying to get at, is that we're not intended to make judgments on Laura for those decisions that she made, because it's very much complicating how she saw herself in the relationship, and then how she grows to see herself throughout the time of the movie that we see.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think Jacob, I mean, another strength of the film is that, like you said, there aren't any flashbacks with, or any good sides, I guess, of Jacob. You know, I'm sure that they did have great, you know, interactions with each other. I mean, 5 years is a long time. But I think that this film didn't even need the flashbacks to really emphasize on the fact that Jacob didn't seem to love her as much as she loved him. Or even, I don't even know if love is even in the picture, because of how Jacob is completely blinded by his passion and his ambition for this project. Mm-hmm. And it almost seems like he just used the talent that Laura had within the years of this building process. And when he, you know, decided that she wasn't going to be any help and almost a liability to his project, he just drops her. And I think that whole action just completely and accurately encapsulates what sort of person Jacob is. And why Laura is so heartbroken is because I remember a scene where she's like, how did you do it? How did you just stop loving me? And when I heard that, I'm like, it doesn't seem like Jacob loved you at all. And it's almost, that's what was really breaking Laura. She couldn't believe or accept the fact that throughout those years, Jacob just wasn't really into the relationship.
Yeah, the power dynamic of their feelings. And I think it was just like, it was dependency. Like, he depended on her, and which is what she has, like, you know, when she's on stage, like, yelling at him after he's like super mean to Jackie, and she loses it on him, and she's yelling at him. She's saying, like, I did everything to support your career, your dreams, and then you took it away from me. Like,
we did this together and you took it away. And so I think also realizing, yeah, like when she's like, how do you turn it off? Like she was very dependent on him for fulfillment. And I do, like, you absolutely hit it nail on the head. Like he absolutely used her to build his success. And she, you know, even I would say, I don't know if she loved him at the end. I think love is a very complex thing to understand, but definitely a dependency. She developed a dependency on him.
Absolutely. All right. With the couple minutes that we have, do you have any takeaways from the movie that you really want to say, or any key themes or ideas that you really picked up from the movie?
I feel like I hit on all of them. I just want to reiterate, I just love this movie, but it's so, like, I think I cried when it ended because I was just, I don't think I was like sad. I think I was just like kind of overwhelmed and being like, oh my gosh, like I can't believe what I just watched. And that's also due in part, it's been a long time since I've seen a good movie. So I was so excited to watch this one. But yeah, I think it does such a good job of, you know, not just like guiding the watcher and being like, okay, this is all the things that you should think. It's like, here's this extremely like well acted, like the actors do such a good job in this film. Like well written, it's well paced, and you're just kind of caught up in every moment wondering what's going to happen. The romance draws you in, the comedy draws you in, and then the ending just kind of shakes it all up and is like, here you go. Which like I said at the beginning, I really, really enjoy that. So yeah, whether or not, I just want to reiterate what other people have said, whether or not you take this as like a happily ever after romance between Laura and Monster, or you take it for the very strict metaphorical sense, I think either way, it's a movie to be well enjoyed.
I agree. I think this movie is to be enjoyed. I guess one thing that I found was, I guess, the importance of a support system, somebody even like Monster, who initially doesn't seem like he has anything to offer. He actually offered everything. And I think that really ties into the importance of having somebody in your life who not only supports you and really elevates your self-esteem, but really just has you recognize what you have and, you know, where you're at. And yeah. I think. Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to jump in real quick and say maybe the key takeaway is learn how to express your emotions before yeah. It results in you killing your ex-boyfriend on stage.
Oh, my goodness. Thank you. That's so amazing, Randy. Yeah, no, you know what? That is such an accurate message as well, because I feel like she imploded. Like that was her real breaking point. And it's if it was real, it's irreversible. So sadly, yes, Randy, I think you're completely right. Don't act upon your emotions, or else act upon it as soon as possible, or else you're gonna implode and it's gonna come out in a tragic disaster. But anyways, I don't know. I really enjoyed the film. I'm so glad that you recommended it to me, and I also love the fact that it doesn't seem like romance and love were kind of the central pushing point. It just kind of seemed to really develop naturally. And I think I really appreciated that. But yeah, thank you so much, Randy, for joining in me with today's discussion. Another great movie review, and always great insights.
Yes, thank you so much, Jeff. I'm waiting impatiently until I find another movie as good as this one.
All right. Thank you so much, Randy. Have a lovely afternoon.
You too. Bye.
Bye-bye. All right, everybody, that is it for today's discussion. I hope you guys enjoy that. We are going to be coming back with another episode next week, so stay tuned for that. And look at it, guys, outside, it's completely sunny. It seems like it's quite warm as well, so maybe it's a good time to take a walk and enjoy the sun. That is it for today's episode. I hope you guys enjoyed that. Have a lovely afternoon, and I'll see you all next week. Bye-bye.